Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda.
Jaya Jaya Jiva Jaya Jaya Nityananda.
Jaya Jaya Chandra Jaya Gora Bhakta Vrinda.
Jaya 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 Gora Bhakta Vrinda.
Jaya Jaya Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda.
Jaya Jaya Jiva Jaya Jaya Nityananda.
Shri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, 53 to 55 is on the board. So let's stop 53. Om Gyanatimirandasya Gyananjana Shunakaya Chakshurvirmilitam Yena Tasmin Shri Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manovistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Padam Ayam Danati Swapadantikam Mukham Karoti Vachanam Pangam Langarite Girim Yad Kripa Muhammade Shri Guru Vindarine He Krishna Karna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostite Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhana Sute Devi Pranamami Dari Priye Vamshita Pataru Vyascha Kripa Sindhu Deva Cha Patipanam Pavanevyo Vaishnevyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shrasadi Guru Bhaktivinoda
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare
Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Text 53. Pancha Vidha Raksha Shanta Dasya Sakya Vatsalya Madhurya Nala Shingara Raksha Savate Prabhalya. There are five transcendental mellows: neutrality, servitorship, friendship, parental affection, and conjugal love, which is also known as the mellow of sweetness. Conjugal love exceeds and excels all others. Text 54. Shantarase Shantarati Prema Paryantahaya Dasirati Raga Paryanta Krameta Bhadaya. The position of neutrality increases up to the point where one can appreciate love of Godhead. The mellow of servitorship gradually increases to the point of spontaneous love of Godhead. Text 55. Sakya Vatsalya Rati Paya Anuraga Simha.
Sakya Vatsalya Paya Anuraga Simha.
Subaladya Rabhava Paryanta Premera Mahima.
Subaladya Rabhava Paryanta Premera Mahima.
Sakya in friendship.
Vatsalya
in parental affection.
Rati
affection.
Paya
obtained.
Anuraga Simha
up to the limit of subordinate spontaneous love. Subala Adhyera. Of friends like Subal and others.
Bhava.
Ecstatic love.
Paryanta.
Up to.
Premera Mahima.
The glory of love of Godhead. Translation. And the book I use language to A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. After the mellows of servitorship, there are the mellows of friendship and parental love, which increase to subordinate spontaneous love. The greatness of the love found in friends like Subal extends to the standard of ecstatic love of Godhead. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says that the mellow of neutrality increases to simple love of God, Godhead. In the mellow of servitorship, love of Godhead increases beyond that to affection, counter love, which is anger based on love, love and attachment. Similarly, the mellow of friendship increases to affection, counter love, love, attachment and sub-attachment. It is the same with the mellow of parental affection. The special feature of the mellow of friendship exhibited by personalities like Subal is that it increases from fraternal affection to counter love, to spontaneous attachment, to subordinate attachment, and finally to the ecstasy where all the ecstatic symptoms continuously exist. So on this very auspicious day of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's appearance day, as I was reading in preparation for the class yesterday afternoon, I noticed that Srila Prabhupada, he is writing mainly in his purports based on the words of the acharyas. And in Chaitanya Charitamrita, in this particular purport, he speaks about Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and his words on this. And at the beginning of this chapter, he speaks. He speaks about Bhakti Vinod Thakur's purport to Chaitanya Charitamrita. I'm trying to keep it as close as possible. So Madhya Lila, chapter 23, is titled Life's Ultimate Goal, Love of Godhead. The following summary of the 23rd chapter is given by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his Amrita Pravaha Bhasya. In this chapter, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu describes the symptoms of emotion and love and the awakening of one's original loving relationship with the Lord, as well as the characteristics of a devotee who has actually attained that stage. He then describes the gradual increase of love of God to the point of Mahabhava. He then describes the five divisions of attraction and how they continue. He also describes the mellow derived from conjugal love, which is the supreme emotion. Conjugal love is divided into two categories, svakya and parakya. Svakya refers to loving affairs between a husband and wife, and parakya refers to the loving affairs between two lovers. There are a number of descriptions in this connection. There is also a description of the 64 transcendental qualities of Krishna and the 25 transcendental qualities of Srimati Radharani. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then describes those candidates who are eligible to taste the mellows of devotional service Their fundamental natures and varieties are also described. The Lord also informs Sanatana Goswami about all the confidential paraphernalia of devotional service. He gives a description of Goloka Vrindavan, where the Lord is engaged in his eternal pastimes described in the Harivamsa. Here is also an opposing description and a favorable description of Kesha Avatara. All these instructions are mentioned herein. In this way, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu blessed Sanatana Goswami, placing his hand on his head. Thus, Sanatana received the power to describe these subjects in his books, like Hari Bhakti Vilas. This is directly from Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's commentary on Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. And we see that it's a very technical and analytical part of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, where in great detail the various rasas and mellows are being described. And I think it's one of the major glories of Mahaprabhu that he's given this opportunity to his disciples, to the Goswamis, to enumerate all these great literatures. He himself hasn't done that. He left us 8 verses in the form of Shishrikasakam. But here, in his conversations between his intimate disciples and followers, he speaks about the highest goal, the ultimate goal of life, the most intimate topics with them, and in this way glorifies them by extracting it from them, like his talks with Ramananda Roy. It's a very similar concept. Ramananda Roy is glorified the world over, yet Mahaprabhu is there having a conversation with him about these very intimate, very detailed topics. It's a very glorifying aspect. The Lord loves to glorify his devotees, and in this way, speaking about the highest topics and the ultimate goal of life, he glorifies his devotee even further, and also benedicts them and gives them the mercy in which to describe these subjects, and the Goswamis could write the numerous literatures that they did. The very, very detailed nature of devotion is one such example, where there are 4 waves. Yet, in our initial study in Bhakti Shastra, we study just 1 wave of this very complex work. It's so detailed. Our Goswamis were writing for the people of their time, the intellectuals, those who were interested in logic and analytics. So it has a similar type of format in terms of Nyaya, but the subject matter deals with Bhakti and the various processes that one has to go through. Also, what are the symptoms of one who is actually attaining the stage on that process? It's important to know. Many times in life, we're not sure of something, so we have to test it. And when we see a certain result, then we understand, okay, this is working, or okay, this is not working. So Bhakti similarly has certain checks and balances that one has to sort of look out for on their path and on their practice. Am I going in the right direction? So we have literatures like Chaitanya Charitamrita and like Srimad Bhagavatam to guide us and to show us how previously it was done, how we could follow in the footsteps of great devotees. Also see many people who were not very successful and what happened, and you could also learn from that. And we see that Srila Prabhupada is always quoting from the various authorities, from the various acharyas. Here at the beginning, the summary of the chapter, he speaks directly about Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and in the purport, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And on this day, I think it's only befitting that we speak about the personality and the character of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's father, illustrious father, Srila Satchidananda Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So he appeared in 1838 in a very wealthy family in the Nadia district of West Bengal. And he is most known for his very prolific writings. a most amazing and very deep literary prayers and poems glorifying and praying to the Lord and his associates. He also performed extremely revolutionary preaching activities and transformed. He was one of the great reformers of the Gaudiya Vaishnavism movement as such. Before him, the time before Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur, Gaudiya Vaishnavism was very diluted in the form in which it was practiced. It was not in a very pure form, in the sense that it was being taken very cheaply because of the concocted form that it was being practiced in. The life of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur is extremely exemplary because he had a very responsible government position as a district magistrate, which is the equivalent for us of a high court judge. And he progressed on further until the highest position that he could obtain as an Indian body person working under the colonial, the British rule, which was a deputy magistrate. And he was only a deputy magistrate because that was the highest position an Indian person can hold in the rank under British rule. But technically, he was fully the magistrate because he was performing all the functions and all the duties that was required of him at a magistrate level. At the same time, he maintained a very Krishna conscious family life, and he wrote almost 100 books on Krishna consciousness. Such management of one's time is amazing to see, how someone can use their day performing all their duties but at the same time devoting so much time to their spiritual life and with the mood of sharing Krishna consciousness. So after a full day of working the government service that he had, he would sleep for 4 hours a day. He would get up at midnight and then write throughout the night until the morning at around 4 a.m. I have his schedule here that I looked up yesterday. We'll go through that just now. Always anxious to use every moment in the loving service of Krishna, he followed a strict, austere daily schedule. So from 8 p.m. at night to 10 p.m. at night, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur would take some rest for 2 hours. From 10 p.m. to 4 a.m. he would write. From 4 a.m. to 4:30 a.m. he would rest. From 4:30 a.m. to 7 a.m. he would chant his japa. From 7 a.m. to 7:30 a.m. he would take care of correspondence, which in that time meant corresponding to letters by hand, mail and sending them by post. By 7:30 a.m. to 9:30 a.m., he would study shastras in depth. 9:30 a.m. to 10 a.m., he would bath, take prasadam, which was half a liter of milk, fruit, and 2 chapatis, take care of bodily duties and in total, and at 10 a.m., he would leave to court duties. So from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m., he had court duties. 1 p.m. to 2 p.m., he would refresh at home, lunch prasadam. It doesn't say lunch prasadam, but 1 p.m. to 2 p.m. it just says refresh at home, which probably means relax, take some rest, or take care of grihastha affairs. 2 p.m. to 5 p.m., court duties again. 5 p.m. to 7 p.m., he would translate Sanskrit shastras to Bengali. And from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m., bath, prasadam, which was half a liter of milk, rice, and 2 chapatis. So a summary of his daily schedule: he would sleep for 3 hours. He would write for 8.5 hours. Japa and study 4.5 hours. And work for 6 hours. So it's an amazing schedule for a person to have. Okay, sleep for 3 hours? That's already a pretty amazing feat for many of us, you know. We need 5 to 6 hours, or else we're grumpy and we don't want to see anyone. But here is our charity who sleeps for 3 hours. He works for 6 hours, but he writes for 8.5 hours out of 24. I think this is a great indication of the amount of love and compassion, besides the deep realization that Bhaktivinoda Thakur had. He was a preacher, and he wanted this literature to get out to everyone. So he would write prolifically and dedicate that amount of time every day from his schedule just for this purpose. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was the original book distributor. He was the first Vaishnava to send his literature to Western countries and to have them sent to libraries in the West. He sent them to many famous people as well. But he never neglected his spiritual life. He took Vaishnava Diksha from Sri Vipin Bihari Goswami in the line of Janava Mata, consort of Nityananda Prabhu. And afterwards he received spiritual initiation and direction from Sri Jagannath Das Babaji. Sri Jagannath Das Babaji and Sri Bhaktivinoda Thakur were instrumental in establishing and reviving the lost birthplace of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which is Yogapith. Before him, many of these holy places were not discovered and were not confirmed. Sometimes they were just, you know, some local people who Shishira Adagokinaki Jamadade Shakedeviki Jamajanatale Subhadramanaki Jamakitanaki. So we didn't really have the Navadvip Mandala Parikrama before Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, because many of the holy pastime places were not discovered or were only known by a few people who lived and worshipped in that area. So by his meditation and his research and his parikrama through the area of Navadvip, he discovered Sri Yogapith, the birthplace of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And this was confirmed by his spiritual master, Srila Jagannath Das Babaji, that this indeed was Yogapith. And we can see how all of his material accomplishments, they never interfered with his spiritual advancement. Sometimes, practitioners, we have this problem that when our material life is very successful, we tend to focus on it more and cultivate it more than our spiritual life. But we can see that this was never the issue with Bhaktivinoda Thakur, for example. He was always prideless, humble. He was humble and friendly to everybody. And it said that whoever begged charity from him, they never left his home unsatisfied. They always lived happy, very satisfied, content, and with a very positive mood towards him and Vaishnavism. Because as I mentioned before, the mood towards Vaishnavism was not positive. It was seen as a sentimental type of concocted way of worship. And intellectuals didn't take it very seriously. Yet Bhaktivinoda Thakur lives in a time where there was a rising intellectualism that was coming from within India. Even though he studied with many other intellectuals who were studying Western education, but came from very spiritual and religious backgrounds. They question in respectable and honorable ways their own tradition and the philosophy of the West together. There was a community called the Bhadralok. And the Bhadralok were extremely intellectual people. And there were many reformers like Vivekananda, for example, was also part of the Bhadralok. Ramamohan Roy. So these were many reformers and many intellectuals. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur actually established Vaishnava or Bhakti literature, which he discovered by the age of 29. After being so expert in so many other fields, finally he read literature from the Gaudiya Vaishnava perspective. And this made such a deep impression on his heart that since then he read prolifically, he studied prolifically, and wrote about it prolifically. Furthermore, he wrote also in intellectual ways for the Bhadralok community. And in this sense, he extended his writings, and that's when he distributed books to very influential and key Western thinkers. It's also said that he was very courageous, and he always acted for everyone's welfare. We can see how he kept his own bodily needs to such a minimum. Yet he led a very balanced yet simple life, fulfilling and at the same time responsible. And for me, this was really amazing to see such a personality. It was not just juggling things around, but it's so ordered and so sort of set in what he does that it works so perfectly. It really works perfectly. Because ultimately, this is what we want. Our time is very limited in the material world. So we always need to see and work out the best way to make use of our bad bargain, which is the very troublesome material body. And we can see from these examples that by keeping these things to a minimum, he was able to maximize his time and leave us with so much beneficial knowledge. So he really possessed amazing qualities. One such prayer I'd like to read is, well, a purport to one of his prayers. Thus, when you become a pious good soul, by possessing all good qualities, you should give up desires for fame and honor. Just make your heart humble, knowing that Lord Sri Krishna lives within all living beings. You should respect and honor everyone at all times. You will attain virtue by being humble, merciful, respecting others and renouncing desires for fame and honor. In such a state, you should sing the glories of the Supreme Lord. Weeping, Bhaktivinoda submits this prayer at the lotus feet of the Lord. O Lord, when will you give me such qualities as these? You can see our acharyas, they were gold miners. They had all these fortunate and amazing good qualities, and yet, humbly, and in such a prideless mood, they would submit these prayers at the lotus feet of the Lord. Bhaktivinoda Thakur is very famous for his prayers in Sharanagati. Really amazing, heartfelt prayers. And it said that these moods, when one is expressing these moods and one is praying in these moods, it really helps the practitioner's bhakti develop. And he wrote these things not just for himself, but for us also. So we should take advantage, read, and understand the mood behind why these poems were written. And the goal will also be achieved. So there were three major preaching achievements of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He wrote 100 authorized spiritual books. He discovered the appearance place of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he introduced various preaching innovations. Besides books in Bengali, Oriya, which is the language spoken in Jagannath Puri in Orissa, and English, he revived and explained Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's message, and he wrote hundreds of poems and songs full of spiritual sentiments and Shastra Siddhanta, philosophical conclusions. And without these writings, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would not actually be accessible to us today, because his message was so lost and diluted before Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So we are glad that he took the time, the energy and effort to write these literatures so that we can understand who Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was, understand his mood and his mission. Some of the books that Sri Bhaktivinoda Thakur has written, Sri Krishna Samhita, Kalyana Kalpataru, Sri Chaitanya Sri Trastakam, Sri Navadvipam Mahatmya, Jaiva Dharma, Sri Harinam Chintamani, Bhajan Rahasya, Gita Mala, Gita Bali, Sharanagati, and commentaries on Bhagavad Gita and Chaitanya Charitamrita. Some of the major works, that is, of the 100, the small portion of the 100. And you see Srila Prabhupada quoting very regularly in Bhagavad Gita and Chaitanya Charitamrita. I think those are the two most books that I see Prabhupada quoting Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur from, besides Sharanagati, which are very, very helpful, very right? So yes, I was speaking about how he sent to universities around the world books of slokas, in fact. Not just in English, he sent Sanskrit to these different universities. He sent, well, the first book I think was Sri Gauranga Lila Smarana, which had 47 pages of English introduction to the subject matter. And then Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, His Life and Precepts. This is a very, very famous book, and I think recently some of the Vaishnavas, some of the ISKCON devotees have discovered some books in Western libraries of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur that were sent in the 1800s. And such discoveries are real treasures for us. And hopefully, you know, we can have these books on display somehow that devotees can actually see the handwriting even of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. It said that he was a very neat, very together person, and his writing reflected this as well. And there are three major predictions concerning the preaching movement that Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur had made. Well, the first sort of prediction, that he said that a personality will soon appear, and he will travel all over the world to spread the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. And I think we all know who this is. Anybody? His second prediction was, very soon the chanting of Harinam Sankirtan will be spread all over the world. Oh, when will that day come when people from America, England, France, Germany, Russia will take up kartals and mridangas and chant Hare Krishna in their towns? So you can see how this is very much manifest. And the third prediction, when will that day come when the fair-skinned foreigners will come to Sri Mayapur Dham and join with the Bengali Vaishnavas to chant Jai Sachinandan, Jai Sachinandan, Jai Sachinandan? When will that day be? So it's said that Srila Prabhupada has actually fulfilled these three predictions. By his preaching mission, has fulfilled Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's three predictions. And it's virtually significant also that Srila Prabhupada appeared in the same year that Bhaktivinoda Thakur sent his books overseas. This Srila Prabhupada himself spoke about, and he felt very empowered by the previous acharyas. And it's amazing how he fulfilled these predictions perfectly. And not even, you know, in a span of many years and many centuries, just in under 100 years, these predictions have already become realized. Okay, so this is a very, very short summary of the amazing personality of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. We have so much more that we could share and say about him. But with our time that we have been given, I hope that we can really do some justice to him on his appearance day. For me, he is a very inspiring role model. So I really like university preaching, and it was a service that I really liked in South Africa. While I was studying commercial law and management, it was very nice to share some type of Krishna consciousness and guidance with my fellow peers and students in the university. And many of them, to my surprise, were looking. They didn't seem like it outwardly, but they were looking for the answer to life's ultimate goal. Maybe even they didn't know it in that way, but they were all looking. Because everybody is looking for happiness, ultimate happiness, not just the temporary time. It's there, but it doesn't satisfy. So everyone wants to find that type of satisfaction, but they don't know how. So even if we can help them, even at university level, where we can invite them to small type of gatherings where we speak about, even if it's like a more guidance type of counseling, or where you're there, just available as support, they can come to you and speak to you on these type of subjects where they have questions about life in general. Because as Prabhupada said, there are so many institutions around the world, maths, physics, you name it. But there's nothing, no institution that teaches about the most fundamental aspect to us, which is the soul. So where is that university that teaches the science of the soul? So we should try as much as possible to follow in the footsteps of our acharyas in the mood of preaching, in the sense of establishing maybe not something so solid, but something that works in terms of preaching the science of the soul. And so I would like to also be able to preach in that type of a platform, not just to students, but to other academics. And I really pray for the mercy and blessings from the Vaishnavas and the previous acharyas, especially Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who is an excellent scholar, renowned scholar, and whose works we are now discovering in different Western countries. But was very much appreciated. His work was extremely appreciated by intellectuals, both in India and abroad. So, with that, I'd like to in the class and ask for comments and questions if I can.
I have a comment and a question. Mm-hmm. The comment is, I was reading something, the relationship between Srila Bhaktisiddhanta and Bhaktivinoda. And I was amazed at the deep relationship between them. The very deep relationship between them. And so much so that when Srila Bhaktisiddhanta opened centers and temples, many times, not only that, many times he gives the name of the deity like Vinod. It is a pain because of his father and then guru, because he considers his father like his guru or his first guru. So I was really amazed of that and this deep realization of what is guru and disciple. Even though he was his father, he didn't treat him like father but like guru. My question now is for the appearance of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, I'm reading again Bhajana Rahasya from Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And it's explaining, sorry, in the very first page, actually, that 90% of devotees doesn't know the difference between bhajan and archana. So, can you maybe explain this point?
Can try my best. From what we understand generally from Srila Prabhupada's writing, bhajan is it can be very personal. You have collective bhajan and you have personal bhajan. So collective bhajan is where you can sit with a group, big or small, and collectively have the mood of worship, but through song, through praise, generally. Whereas worship, we have archa vigraha worship, but worship can also be in the mood of praising the Lord through song. But there's a slight difference in the mood. We have a prayerful mood in both are surrender, but one is of worship where you want to take care. Worship like how we take care of the Lord every day. We don't have the power to take care of the Lord, but the mood is there that we want to now take care of the Lord and worship Him the best we can. Whereas bhajan, you can take the mood of prayer. Prayer, surrender. It can take many different moods. And generally personal bhajan also is something that should be guided by the spiritual master. It's said that Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he really tried to, you know, take out all of these sahajiya type of movements and mentality that prevailed around the time. This was one of the very clear points that he makes like this, that bhajan should be directed and the authorization of the spiritual master. It's not that personal bhajan, you know, it can go whichever way you want it or however you want it. It needs to be authorized. He himself took guidance of Srila Jagannath Das Balaji, and this is a very important point for us, because Srila Prabhupada also, he reinforced this idea that, you know, yes, bhajan can be personal, but we should have the guidance of highly elevated spiritual personalities like our spiritual masters to guide us, because if we don't, we've seen many examples even in Srimad Bhagavatam of practitioners who've tried to practice bhakti alone. Even Maharaj Bharat, who was the emperor of the world, when he was alone in the forest, he got attached to a deer and remembered a deer at the time of death. Yet he was an extremely elevated personality and devotee. So, you know, like this, we are advised that yes, we can have personal bhajan and collective bhajan, but this personal bhajan we should take some caution with and guidance with. And yeah, even collective bhajan, there are certain standards and etiquette in which it should be performed. Like we have Shri Indra Prabhu, who has standards for kirtan, for example. He's not the only acharya on kirtan. Yeah, yesterday we read Chaitanya Prabhu about Srila Prabhupada's disciple Madhu Dvisha Prabhu, who was also a great kirtan leader. I'm sure there are many standards, proper standards of etiquette and, you know, moods and types of worship that we should be doing through bhajan, and also through plays, to songs, to poems. We can see our acharyas have written prolifically poems. Many of the songs that he has written we sing. Gaur Aarti, for example. Very lovely songs. And a comment about Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Yes, they shared a very, very deep relationship. We know that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur was praying for a ray of vision. And that was Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And when he was, I think, 10 days old, just a few days old, Bhaktivinoda Thakur had brought him to meet Jagannath on the Ratkat, because the Ratkat stayed for 3 days outside his house. So he brought the child, who was Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, being a prasad, to Jagannath. And then a gala fell from the diti onto the baby. And the baby's first grain ceremony was performed on the cart with Jagannath Mahaprasad. So, yeah, they shared a very, very deep bond from the time before he appeared. He was praying for him. He appeared. Even the time when Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he mildly rebuked, because he was, you know, Vaishnava. So he wants his child to be a Vaishnava. So he mildly rebuked Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur because he wanted to take the mango. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur never took mango for the rest of his life. And he made a very strict solemn vow. And even Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur was surprised at this. So, yeah. In bhakti, there are many mellows. And to have this relationship with a devotee is really amazing.
I just gave this example of the life of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, who, when even though Srila Bhaktisiddhanta was very knowledgeable into astrology, very much, he was one of the best people in his time, if not the best. Even though that, when Bhaktisiddhanta said something opposite to his calculation, Bhaktisiddhanta was following Bhaktisiddhanta and not his calculation, which is amazing. It shows deep relationship.
Definitely. He was very expert in these fields, having learned these arts from a very young age. And I also like, because Prabhupada also says, you know, sometimes devotees were worried about different astrological things. And Prabhupada said, Krishna can kick millions of rounds. For me, this is a very strong point. Okay, astrology is there, we don't deny it. It's a, you know, it's a part of the world, and it affects us, of course, in a certain way or something. But still, Krishna is the master of all these forces. So we should focus on the master of these forces. And he can change them if he wants. Or if he doesn't want, that's also fine. Devotees, we surrender to this master because he is most worthy of our worship. So we can see from these examples where this is coming from. Yeah, it may be there, but the higher authority takes precedence. Thank you very much. Is there anyone else who has any comments or questions?
Anywhere it is mentioned how we can keep this physical body, because we are living in this material world, and in Gita and in Vedas, the first line says that only a healthy body which is capable of doing any karma for the moksha. But at this moment, if you look around us, we only see sick people. So what is a way to show to keep this body physically fit so that we are able to do bhajana or to sit over here for another 1 hour or to drink? Anywhere it is explained to keep this physical body. And we justify it as though a sick person and listen to things half and half not.
As I was saying to Guruji, the example that Srila Prabhupada, he mentioned that we should make the best of a bad bargain. So the material body is actually a very bad bargain. If you hear about the spiritual forms that exist in the spiritual world, or the higher planetary systems, the different Gandharvas, Kinaras, for example, they have very beautiful forms. And the areas are free from pain, from suffering, old age, even death sometimes for those who don't want it. It can be prolonged, but eventually, of course, there has to be a time when even that ends. So this material world is known as a place of suffering. It's a temporary place. And it's known as a prison house. Just like any government or state has a prison. Why? Because people are sent there for rectification. It's not a permanent place. Prison is not the home. So we're sent to this place for rectification. And we're taught certain lessons along the way. Many people who've gone through some kind of trauma or body-related illness or ailment, cancer survivors, for example, they're people who have sometimes realized very profound messages, things that they didn't realize were important in life before that. After going through such a struggle or a battle with cancer, for example, and surviving, they have a different perspective on life and even on death itself. These sort of experiences that we go through teach us different things. And the way that we can maintain the body in a proper way, or maintain and try to get the best out of this body in the sense of using it in the most proper way, we try as much to control our tongue by taking Krishna prasadam. Because eating food is different from taking Krishna prasadam. Food will nourish the body, yes, but prasadam nourishes the body and the soul, both. And for the body to be alright, the soul needs to be alright. Because you can have a perfectly working body, perfectly functioning body, but if the soul is out of the body, it's a dead body, it's useless. Just like Prabhupada said, we should engage our time for activities that deal with the soul. Otherwise, whatever else we do is like the decoration of a dead body. So a dead body, you can decorate it as much as possible, even if it's in the perfect working order. Scientists up to today, they cannot inject life into that body, even if it's perfect. All the organs are in perfect order, the skin, everything is working. Still, They cannot forcefully inject a life force into the body, because life cannot be created in the laboratory. Life has to come from life, firstly. And when we have this material body, in whatever shape it may be, good, bad, or ugly, we should use it for its supreme purpose. As much as possible, it's not that we just neglect the body altogether. But we take care of the body, even Bhaktivinoda Thakur, maybe he had, you know, 3 hours of sleep. He took half an hour to take prasadam and bathe. It's a very small amount of time. But he didn't neglect his body. He took care of it because that was his instrument in which he did all of his seva, all of his duties, all of his preaching, all of his spiritual practices. So it is important to take care of this body because it is our vehicle, our instrument that will help us.
I don't know how to treat this body, but if you... Mahatma Gandhi, he used to run an ashram. And all of these 100, 200 people were big people. I don't know how many people now, but he was very conscious about the good food he gave. Actually, he didn't look on cooking also. And in the ashram, he was very wise of it. Because if you force him in the ashram, people should be healthy. Because only a healthy body can do all kinds of things. So it was a very practical approach, rather than you can go in a coma. And your still soul is there, but you can't do anything, you are not dead.
Precisely.
Still, you are, so it's the body actually, what we need, and everybody knows body. So, I hope there will be some good answer for how to keep the physical body, but, which means, because it's how we are sick around here. Mahatma Gandhi gave the answer, yes, good food, and going the ashram all.
Exactly.
But eating prasadam, I don't see an example of healthy people around. You need to eat prasadam.
But still, that depends on the individual, because we are responsible for our body. We should know what is good for our body and what's not good. If we don't know, we should research that.
Should get some guidance from Prabhupada.
Yes, but that's exactly what he says. Prabhupada was very strong on this point about prasadam. He always cared for the devotees and always took care of them. Prasadam was alright. He would even ask the devotees personally, is the prasadam alright? Are you getting enough prasadam? Many, many encounters with Prabhupada's disciples in the early days where Prabhupada would personally ask, personally seek. What to speak of when Prabhupada started himself, he was personally cooking for the devotees. He would personally clean after. Prasadam is a very, very important and very potent form of taking care of the body. If you want to see that.
Maybe somewhere about prasadam, because it's very nice what you're talking, that you must have been some good guidelines. Prasadam is actually food, you know.
Sanctified
food. Is it good written somewhere? What kind of prasadam is
there? Bhagavad Gita chapter. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains what foods in the world are good ones, which is food that makes you healthy. And he has a list of four types.
No, I was talking about Prabhupada, because we haven't seen the Krishna. Prabhupada was there, he was looking also for this person. So that person that we have encountered and seen, and people have experienced it.
Prabhupada speaks about that in the purport to Bhagavad Gita, to the verses that she speaks about. But if you really want to know more, Prabhupada, Lilamrita, Prabhupada, we have many DVDs of interaction. Yes, with many cookbooks from very, very good cooks in Hare Krishna movement. Kurma Das, for example, Ali Raj Pramod. They speak not just only about recipes, but about nutrition for body and soul.
Can I say something? Sorry. But I don't know if you're aware, but recently, the Nikam author, he wrote a book, Stop Killing Devotees. And what he meant is stop putting too much of sugar and eating too much of butter and ghee. I mean, I understand where he's coming from. I also understand, because we are still in the human body and we still got a different body, and the best way is to eat prasadam. But
that's why I said it should be responsible.
So
because we don't just throw things together in there, and because we throw it together, we call it prasadam and we eat it.
So we should be careful in cooking the prasadam and making sure we balance it and making sure it's nutritious.
Yes, that's my point about responsibility. We don't leave the care of our body to somebody else. we should be responsible for what goes in and how to take care of it.
Yeah, I agree, but if you are eating prasad and not cooking it, I think that's what I'm trying to say. He said yesterday, he was referring to yesterday's prasad, I believe. Am I right or wrong? But we,
just in general.
Just in general?
You mean the ghee, the makkhana. Well, Krishna said very clearly, he was never eating makkhana. He, Krishna, was not eating the ghee, that is sure. He repeatedly said, Ma, man, he, makkhana, kaya. There's no mention anywhere Krishna eating the makkhana.
Yes, actually, there are many instances in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, and Sri Prabhupada has written in our books, Krishna book, for example, as well. There are many mentions of that. But at the moment, I have to keep to time because that's also part of our etiquette in the temple room. So the class is going to have finished some time ago, but we can discuss after the class. That is not a problem.
Oh.
So Srimad, Chaitanya Charitamrita Ki, Srila Prabhupada Ki, Srila Satchidananda Bhaktivinoda Thakur Ki, Jai Gaur Premanandan.